Three weeks. College basketball counting down. 21 days until hoops as we record here on a Monday night. Lots of reasons to be excited about the upcoming season. And Brad, we had a coaching change and a portal move here in the last couple of days. It never dies, does it?
Is it April or October?
So Fairfield fires or parts ways with Jay Young, who was heading into somewhat of a hot seat year, but also had a team that could have potentially made a little bit of noise with Alexis Yetna if he ever got healthy. The details there are somewhat murky, but seems to be somewhat conduct related. Fourth time in 5 years that a MAC coach has been dismissed in like strange circumstances or right before the season. We had Tim Clouse health issues, the Pat Beilein sexual harassment deal, Mastiello's mess last year, now this. So the MAC produces plenty of drama and also produces some drama players. I mean, as we mentioned, the Mastiello situation, Jose Perez, the diaspora from Manhattan began with that Mastiello move and then Jose Perez hitting the portal. Jose on the move again off to Arizona State. That's our commit of the day, but I guess we will wait and see if anyone from Fairfield winds up making a move trying to replicate what Jose did and enroll somewhere at the mid-year.
Alexis Yetna should get on the market.
If Yetna's healthy, I mean, he's a good player.
Kentucky needs a big, right? They're all broken down there. Do we know if Big Z is actually eligible? I know he's at Kentucky, but like, is he good to go playing-wise?
I don't know.
I did see that Jose Perez is eligible.
But he's only eligible. Who is he eligible according to? Zagoria. Who is Zagoria talking to?
Jose
Perez.
Our Syracuse correspondent, Patrick Wong, found a tweet he sent me that was like, Arizona State's grad school has three enrollment periods per semester.
Well, no, I do think there's a good chance he'll be able to play at least by January, if nothing else. He is a grad student. That does give him some leeway.
I think he's a better way.
In my opinion, they should just let him play. I mean, I don't think he's that good, but maybe he can replace Adam Miller if Adam Miller doesn't get his waiver. So it is just wild that we're 3 weeks away from the season. Like, hey, you know, Jose Perez is going to show up.
Louisville's playing an exhibition on Wednesday.
Good stuff. Very exciting.
ESPN Plus, are you watching?
That's actually great fodder for my flight home from Big 12 Media Day. Sit down, see if Louisville can beat a non-Division I school. It's been a challenge.
Where is Big 12 Media Day? Is it Kansas City?
Kansas City, yes. I'm doing the classic one-day trip. First flight in, last flight out. Very business traveler of me.
You're very in tune with all this travel.
Oh, I'm on the road. I booked like 8 flights. Southwest had like a 3-day sale. Shout out to Southwest. I'm a Southwest stan. I booked like 8 flights to just different college basketball games during they had like a sale 2 weeks ago, including I can announce before we get into the Big Ten today. I can announce I will be at Providence Georgetown, the game of the year.
Oh. I don't think it's going to be the game of the year. I think it's going to be an absolute disaster. I think people are going to throw stuff on the court.
It's going to be a mess.
Going to stop. People are going to throw beers. People are going to say ridiculous things and swear, and this is going to be a nightmare.
Yes, but I will. I'm going to fly. I'm going to be in Florida. I'm going to fly from Florida to Albany, go to CN Iona on Friday night, wake up early in the morning, crack of dawn, and drive to Providence. Go to Providence versus Georgetown.
Do you already have like a credential or something? How do you know you're getting in?
I mean, I'm Sports Illustrated. I get in.
Let's see. Maybe they want to use your chair for a $500 ticket instead.
I'll call Kim English or Steve Napolillo, who claim I got him the job, and see if they can squeeze me in.
But you said that you're taking 8 flights to games this year?
I have a bunch booked. Yeah, it's craziness.
I don't know if I've been on 8 flights in my life.
Oh, I'm a big flyer. Love flying. All right. Shall we get into the Big Ten?
Go for it.
Another conference preview we've got to get to here. A league that's certainly not without intrigue. Coming off yet another March disappointment. Namely, obviously, the Purdue loss to Fairleigh Dickinson. But I do think state of the league-wise, Brad, before we get into it, the Big Ten was clearly down last year. And the metrics never really caught up because everyone did so well in the non-conference. But, like, there was not a ton of talent league-wide. There was not a lot of great teams league-wide. And I think the best way of illustrating this, and again, I actually don't mean this as a slight to Northwestern because I think they had a great year. Obviously, they deserve a lot of credit. But I think the best way of describing it is that there was way too many times last year where I turned on Northwestern versus a Big Ten team and felt like Northwestern was the more talented team.
Well, I mean, if you remember, it was really all the Big Ten issues were kind of centered around, like, Christmas break, right?
Yes.
That's when, like, everyone took an analytic nosedive, and, like, Iowa lost to Eastern Illinois. Michigan had some wackiness going on. I think Wisconsin did, too. Like, everyone knocked their analytics kind of, you know, down a tier. By just fooling around against sub-300 teams over break.
And in all, they still had 11 top 50 teams. And then a 12th that was 61st in KenPom. So the metrics still generally liked this group, this conference. But I think it became very obvious that there was just no one other than Purdue that was a elite team. And Purdue's flaws were exposed down the stretch. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes this year. I think I've discussed this either on this platform or on others or both. I do think the, like, construction of the league in terms of, like, where talent is distributed, what types of players are the best players in the league is very different. It's going to have a very interesting impact, right? Like, I think there's a lot better guards in the league right now. Like if you look back to 2021, the five best players in the league per KenPom were Luka Garza, 5, Io, okay, point guard, Kofi, 5, Hunter, 5, Travion, 5. Even go back to, like, 2018, Mo Wagner, 5, Ethan Happ, 5, Kata Bates-Diop, 4, right? Like, the league, when it's had this, like, oh, it sucks in March, you know, can't do anything, 2019-20, Luka Garza, Daniel Oturu, Cassius Winston, Jalen Smith, Caleb Wesson, 4 fives, right? The league has been dominated by fives. This year, for better or worse, I think the thing that I would note, just big picture before we get into any of these teams, is it is a lot less center-driven than it has been in a long time. There's a lot of good guards, whether it's Boo Booey, whether it's Jameer Young, whether it's Terrence Shannon, whether it's Tyson Walker and A.J. Hogard, Bruce Thornton at Ohio State. You know, like, there is some quality backcourt play in this league, that I don't think we've been able to say that in quite a while.
And I mean, should we start with maybe your favorite guard in the conference, Braden Smith and his Purdue Boilermaker?
It is wild how the narrative that I am, like, a Braden Smith stan has taken off. And it's just that I refuse to allow him to be slandered in the way that everyone seems to. Like, everyone clearly thinks that Braden Smith sucks. And maybe he does, right? Like, maybe I'm wrong. But I watched, like, a guy who I think most people would probably, like, if they just took, like, the, oh, he's just, like, a scrawny-looking white guy, like, thing out of it, would think he was on track to have, like, an all-time great career at Purdue. He averaged 10-4-4 as a freshman on a one seed, and it's, like, probably a four-year player. And I think the average narrative is that he's not even a top 100 player in the sport. That's crazy to me. I'm a big Braden Smith believer, and I think if you're going to believe in this Purdue team turning the corner after Fairleigh Dickinson, proving the doubters wrong, a lot of that belief has to be in Braden, that he can be an above average point guard in a high level game. Right? I think you have to believe that.
I was watching the Marquette game the second week of the year, and he had a monster game, and I guess him and Lawyer faded down the stretch. I guess Lawyer more so. I don't know the exact numbers behind their fade.
But I have them somewhere. Hold on one second.
Like a freshman backcourt, you know, I didn't rank Purdue in the top 25 last preseason. And I think on the Big Ten preview we did, I was like, if there's one team who I have outside the top 25 who could just be a monster, it would be Purdue. And that's if ED just becomes, you know, unbelievable now that the center position was all his. And that's exactly what happened, even with freshman guards. And people hate Ethan Morton at the three, and the remaining big men have all kind of not necessarily stagnated, but haven't popped like their recruiting rank suggests.
But so some numbers on that, as you said, there was a fall off in the second half of the year. Pierre Purdue's four best three-point shooters: Fletcher Loyer, Braden Smith, Mason Gillis, Brandon Newman. Fletcher Loyer, first 18 games last year, 37% from three. Last 17 games, 24%. First 18 games for Braden Smith, 44% from three. Last 17 games, 31%. Mason Gillis, first 20 games. He had the suspension, so the numbers are weird. First 20 games, 40% from three. Final 12 games, 28% from three. And then Brandon Newman, first 18 games, 34% from three. Last 17, 28% from three. Right. And you know, you can kind of find it on a map of like, here's the point where Purdue stopped feeling overwhelming to people, right? Because there was points in that non-conference and then early in Big Ten play, like February 1st and before, where they just felt so unstoppable, right? Like it felt like you needed a Herculean effort to have a chance to beat them. And all of a sudden that stopped being the case. And part of that was shooting. I mean, they as a team last year shot 32.2% from three, 276 nationally. And that is despite, and this is an internal number for Matt Painter, so I don't know exactly where it's sourced from, but I assume it's from an analytics service. He told me that they took more open threes than any other team in the country, like uncontested threes. I forget which service has that, but they have a number saying they took more uncontested threes than any other team in the country and shot 32%, right? That's not going to do it. And I guess the question is the truth about Purdue as a team more that first half when they're shooting the cover off of it, or that second half when they're shooting a very average percentage? And if they're shooting a very average percentage, I think it's going to be hard for them to be more than they were last year, right? Which is a very, very good team that's very flawed for an NCAA tournament setting. If they do shoot it, watch out.
Well, it seems like that. I mean, I guess we could even say that there's three X factors for Purdue. I think most people are going to key on Trey Coffin-Wren, who, I guess, more of a center. He was a tremendous recruit, redshirted as a freshman. Matt Painter, I guess, was saying he's going to try to play him and Edie together, which I saw people were skeptical. But on the scale between like Theo John and Jace Johnson and, Azulis Tabellis and Umar Ballo, it's much closer to the Arizona guys. I don't think, like when I heard Matt Painter say that Kaufman and Edie will play some together or more together this year, I didn't like fall off the couch like I did when Wojo said we're going to be playing Theo John at the four.
Yeah.
And then Miles Colvin, who was on the U19 athletic wing, and then kind of the more puzzling one, right, is Lance Jones. I kind of penciled him in to be, you know, ninth man, just like the guard off the bench.
David Jenkins replacement, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen multiple people have him as the starting two guard and moving Loyer to the three, which was certainly surprising, and I guess that's something to track. Maybe there's intel out there that Lance Jones is balling out in the preseason.
Yeah, I'm curious about that just because I don't really think that Painter wants to play with three smaller guards. Like, maybe we'll be proven wrong with that. Painter to me sounded like he wanted to double down on what they've been really good at, which is pounding you on the glass, being physical, being able to, you know, win around the rim, and then letting your point guard make plays and have guys who can make open shots. Now, if they feel like the only way they get out of shooting is that, because they don't trust Mason Gillis to shoot it consistently from three, or they don't trust Morton, or they don't trust Colvin, right? Like, that's where it gets interesting. But I still am skeptical of that. I will say, there's one guy who gets talked about, like, not at all, and I'm pretty sure is not going to play. But if you are looking for that, like, bigger wing who can make shots, it would be Cam Heidi. They speak very highly of his athleticism and his ability to make threes. I guess that would be my, like, sleeper to maybe throw his, you know, get into the mix. But, I mean, it's going to be fascinating, like, what they do lineup-wise at that three and the four positions. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to get a lot of open shots. They're going to be very, very, you know, very, very good on the interior. They're going to pound teams on the inside. And they also are going to be incredibly disciplined. Like, this is a team last year that didn't turn the ball over except for, like, a few weird moments of madness. This is a team that didn't foul, that didn't give up second chances. Like, they did everything pretty much well except for make threes. So, yeah. I get, and I guess this is an interesting way of getting into our, like, bigger picture of Purdue, which is when you think about this group, should they be preseason number one? Right? They're third in the AP poll. They're number one in KenPom. I think, obviously, just based on, like, pure numbers, you'd say Purdue should be the number one team in the country. They're a top 10 team that runs it back. Top 5 team last year, most metrics, runs it back. All 5 starters back. Edie back. Like, Purdue's a pretty substantial favorite to win the Big Ten for the analytics. There's a bigger gap in adjusted efficiency between Purdue and Michigan State than it's between Michigan State and Ohio State, who's the 6th best team in the league per KenPom. So, The Big Ten is Purdue's to lose, and I don't think that's the voter narrative. The voter narrative is Purdue's number 3, Michigan State number 4. We're right there together. And I'm very curious where you stand, which one is closer to reality.
Well, I mean, if you look at T-Rank last year, Purdue ended at 7. Michigan State was 2nd at, like, 20-something. And then then there was the whole big clump from 30 to 50 with the rest of the league. So I think the analytics are kind of parroting almost that same gap from last year. With Purdue, instead of being 7, they're number 1. Michigan State, instead of being 20, whatever, they're 13th. You know, just kind of keeping those gaps. I agree that Purdue should be number 1. I've had Purdue number 1 the whole offseason. They have the best player in the country. He's a dominant force. We saw last year how good they were. They had a freshman backcourt. Seems like they made some nice additions with Lance Jones and Miles Colvin and Trey Coffin taking the next step. I think that's enough being added to this core to be the number 1 team. And then in terms of Michigan State, I think that the narrative is that they improved the roster more than they actually did, probably, right? Because, like, they lose Joey Hauser and they have a monster freshman class, but in terms of immediate impact, like, Cohen Carr is going to play what, at most 15 minutes a game. Xavier Booker is probably going to split the 5 spot at least one way with Sissoko. Jeremy Fears, you know, he'll be a breakout guy for 24-25, but for this year, it's probably going to be, you know, 15-20 points or 15-20 minutes a game. So,
yeah. So
it's not like that they went out and added, you know, like Tyler Burton or one of these monster transfers. But anyway.
So closing the book quickly on Purdue, you have them first nationally, first in the Big Ten. I have them third nationally, just as, like, an NCAA tournament hedge, first in the Big Ten. Edie, I think, you know, there's obviously some risk of national player of the year fatigue, if you will, but I think it's a pretty good chance he wins it again. If he does, he'll be one of the best players in college basketball history. But I do think the on paper best challenger to Purdue is Michigan State, just because I do think there's a needle moved in terms of just being deeper and more athletic, right? I mean, for Michigan State last year, there was this narrative, and I truthfully fed into it a little bit early on in the year when they beat Kentucky and they beat Villanova. Like, oh, you know, Michigan State didn't need to do the portal thing, right? They were able to do it with their own development and, like, betting on Sissoko and, you know, this, that, the other thing. And the truth is, like, probably in the middle, right? Yes, Michigan State was able to make the NCAA tournament, have a good year, finish top four in the Big Ten, go to the SEC scene without having to, you know, force Tom Izzo to take kids he didn't want to take, right? But that being said, there were a lot of times where Michigan State was limping into games because Malik Hall was hurt and they didn't have depth, because Sissoko was in foul trouble or just wasn't good enough at times, and they didn't have a consistent five man, right? Like, this was not a very deep basketball team. This team had Hogard, Walker, Hall, Hauser, Aiken, Sissoko, and then the two backup centers, and then two very young guards who are not likely one who's going to be a one's a Butler now, and one who's probably not going to play this year, Trey Holland. Like, they were playing that kid, Jason Whitens, who was a walk-on, in big minutes, in games. Like, the Alabama game, he's playing, like, 20, he played, like, 15 minutes. But, like, in the non-conference, there was games. He was playing a lot of minutes.
But right, and, like, they went after Micah Parrish, right? Like, he visited.
Yes. So, off of that, right, like, I do think that there's a substantial benefit to just being like, okay, we can pull Jaden Akins and put in Cohen Carr. We can pull A.J. Hogard and put in Jeremy Fears. We can pull Sissoko and play any of these kids. That matters. That helps. And I do think, just like from a raw athleticism and talent standpoint, it gets Michigan State roster looking more like a title team. But for them to really be that, I do think you need one of these freshmen, likely either Carr or Booker, to make a substantial impact. And I think Carr seems most game ready of the group, but Booker is the guy who I think his impact would be greatest if he is able to make an impact. Because, and I don't know if we've talked about it on the show or whatever, I've talked about the Big Ten a lot, obviously. All of the best Izzo teams have been awesome defending the rim. If you look back, they had a stretch from 2015-16 to 2019-20. They were top 7 in KenPom 4 of 5 years. They were top 20 in 2-point defense in all of those years and top 10 in all 4 of the years they were top 10 in the country. The last 3 years, they've lost 13 games each of the past 3 years. They have been outside the top 100 in 2-point defense. And I think we both generally I think they have enough front court options to be serviceable. But I don't see why they're going to improve substantially defensively at the rim without Xavier Booker.
Well, yeah, Booker. That's what Booker should be. I mean, he's a great athlete. You don't need, with these 5-star bigs, you don't want to be in a position where Xavier Booker, plays 32 minutes a game and puts up, 10 and 7. And you're featuring him, and he's not.
It is going to be great when Michigan State plays more Carson Cooper than Xavier Booker.
I was going to say that. It was, back from the old Ben Carter, Jaren Jackson days. Tom Izzo is one of these old school coaches. You could easily see Carson Cooper winning the starting job or something like that. But the whole trap that Shaka got in trouble with, Dana Altman has kind of got dinged with as well, is when you need these 5-stars to play the whole game and you built your roster with them being a featured piece, because the bigs, they have a steeper learning curve, and it's not conducive to having an elite team. Even some of the Kentucky and Duke. I mean, look at Derek Lively last year. It took him half the year, and then he was a role player.
Yep.
So, big picture, where do you stand on Michigan State? Where do you have them ranked nationally and then the Big Ten?
I'm 7th. I mean, this is one of the best backcourts in the country. That's kind of the appeal here. Hogard and Walker. I mean, Walker could be a sneaky All-American candidate. I know a lot of people love Jay Nakins. I mean, if you're going one through three, this Michigan State backcourt is like at least top five in the country.
Yes.
You need help.
And I love Fierce. I mean, Fierce might not get on the floor, but I love Jeremy Fierce. Like, that dude is going to be awesome.
You need a healthy Malik Hall. I wonder if we'll see a little too big action, like if Booker and Sissoko play together at all or anything. But Hall's going to command minutes and get to feed Carr minutes for future as well, and being a top 40 recruit. But yeah, I mean, seventh, I think that's pretty generous for this team. I know most people have them a tad higher.
Yeah.
But for being, what, a 6 or 7 seed last year, they lose Hauser, bring in a lot of freshmen for the future, but one of the best backcourts in the country and should be an improved frontcourt.
I have them 5th, which, you know, again, I do think it feels high, but I do think there's a pretty substantial cutoff to me between the top 3 and maybe even the top 4. I have Tennessee 4th, and then Michigan State, UConn, Marquette, Houston, teams like that, who I think they're just like, they have one more question mark than Kansas, Duke, Purdue, and maybe Tennessee. So, all right, Indiana, Brad. Let's move on. Hoosiers had a, I think, in all things considered, a good year under Mike Woodson, right? Like, better ending, second round, ends up a tournament. I know that's, you know, the standard is higher at Indiana, but a 4 seed, beat Purdue twice. Like, all in all, a successful year. Big, big roster turnover this spring. Jackson Davis to the pros. Race Thompson off to the pros. Miller Kopp, pro. Jalen Huchefino, pro. Tamar Bates, portal. Like, Jordan Geronimo, portal. Like, they lost a ton. But the talent acquisition at Indiana has been at a really high level, and they have brought in two of the most interesting players in the conference, in Khalil Ware from Oregon and Mackenzie Mbako from originally a Duke commit, New Jersey Scholars, AAU, big, long athletic wing. Interesting to build around those two guys and Malik Renew. There will be questions about the shooting. There will be questions about the consistency. But when you're talking about a team, like a layup line team, if you will, like guys like me line up, you're like, all right, those dudes scare me. Like, Mbako, Renew, Ware is like NBA size 3 through 5 and NBA skilled in many ways. It's just a matter of, can they do it consistently and do it at a high level?
Now, the issue with Ware has always been motor, and, you know, he's a jump shooter at times. So I guess in that sense, right, from a skill set perspective, you got Ware with the shot blocking and the shooting, Renew with the more Trayce Jackson-Davis style, right, of athleticism and physicality around the rim. You know, in theory, that works. But then Mbako, someone who the shot looks good, but it hasn't really gone in yet.
And again, how many freshmen shoot at a high level? Very few.
Marquette had two the same year, right, with Marcus Howard and Sam Hauser. That kind of broke everyone's brains. But, yeah, most freshmen don't shoot it very well. And you look at the backcourt, and it's just going to, you know, one of the biggest beauties in the eye of the beholder players is Xavier Johnson. Right? Yes. There are people who think he's going to be now he's healthy, and he'll be a top 100 player, and he'll be one of the best guards in the Big Ten, and he'll be, you know, more of like the stats that he put up at Pitt, but on a winning team. And there are other people who say, no, I've watched a lot of Xavier Johnson here at Indiana. He's not the guy. He's a fine player, but he's not someone who can lead a, you know, top 25 team or anything. So that's kind of the swing piece there.
I think the concern with Xavier is, like, on one hand, right, I think him and Ware in a pick and roll, pick and pop situation is really interesting, right? I mean, talk about a guy who could be a lob threat, a guy who can confidently space the floor. Like, that's really enticing. But at the same time, you're not surrounding him with a lot of shooting. When Xavier Johnson has, as best of his career, has been surrounded by shooting, BC is not a great shooter himself. You're going to go under on every ball screen. And they don't necessarily have a guy that they can use as, like, a backup here, right? I mean, they have CJ Gunn and Gabe Cupps, two very young guards. And they don't have the ability really to flex and go smaller either, right? I mean, maybe you can throw one of those two guys in there. But, I mean, this team is loaded in the front court with big bodies. Anthony Walker from Miami, Peyton Sparks from Ball State. Even Caleb Banks is a combo forward who had some nice moments. Like, they don't have any insurance there to allow you to add another ball handle, another dynamic guy, unless one of these two young guards is really ready to go. And that concerns me a little bit. But, I mean, I guess the way I would describe my feelings on Indiana, I picked Indiana 7th in the Big Ten, 42nd nationally. I would be very surprised if that's where they wind up. Like, that is like the median outcome for Indiana. But I think the more likely outcome is like one, like, is either extreme good or extreme bad, right? Like, either everything clicks and they're pushing for a Big Ten title, or it doesn't at all and they miss the tournament. Like, I don't see a world where this Indiana team just kind of like slumps through the middle of the season and winds up a 6th, 7th, 8th place team.
I mean, I have them 7th and 40th. Right. I don't necessarily see like I guess why would their ceiling and floor be so drastically? I kind of see this as like, I mean, they're huge. They have a lot of talent, but you said right that the shooting's not there. They're a little light on creation. They kind of just grabbed like the best players they could, regardless of fit. But at the end of the day, that size and athleticism, I think, kind of insulates them from falling out too much. But like, what's like, do we really think that Kalel Ware is gonna like flip the switch and be like a top 5 center in the country? And be a lottery.
Well, right. I guess that's
block shot. Like,
I guess that's my point, right? Like, if Kalel Ware, like, I don't think there's a lot of average in Kalel Ware. Like, Kalel Ware will either be what he was at Oregon last year, which is like a net negative, or he'll be one of the best players in the conference, right? Mbako is going to be so jump shooting dependent that he is either going to be one of the best young players in the college basketball, or he's going to be a net negative. Right, Johnson's ups and downs. We've seen him in the past, right? Like, I guess to me, I do think there's a lot more volatility because I think Ware in particular, but like I think it goes kind of roster wide.
I would be very surprised if this team ends up missing the tournament, and I would be also very surprised if they were in. Elite team up there with Purdue and Michigan State. I think that this team is like a solid, you know, kind of like the TCU teams where they're just throwing so much size at you that, you know, they'll go 500 in the Big Ten and they won't lose any bye games because of their size and athleticism and that, you know, they'll collect their 9 or 10 seed and move on.
All right. Let's move on to Northwestern. Northwestern 12-8 in the league last year, headlined by that win over Purdue on Super Bowl Sunday. Go to the NCAA tournament for second time in program history, beat Boise State, push UCLA. By all accounts, a wildly successful and very surprising season for the Wildcats. Gives Chris Collins quite the lifeline in terms of job security. Really changes the whole complexion of where the program was. But we've seen this movie before, right? They go out, they make the NCAA tournament in 2017. They turn around the next year. Yes, there were a lot of mitigating factors with the arena being built and whatnot, but things fell apart. And Northwestern can ill afford to allow that to happen again. Good news for them. They bring back Boo Booey, who is one of the best guards in college basketball. You know, I think for a while it just felt like, would Boo ever turn into a guy who could be a winning point guard, right? He was so wild, so inefficient, was, you know, not a guy you really trust to be able to go to the rim. And it just kind of clicked for him last year. He made better decisions. He got downhill more. He really developed that floater game. And he made huge shots. I mean, you think about some of the games. I mean, Northwestern had a closer on the floor in Boo Booey. And that is a great feeling if you're a coach to have that late in games. Now, they do lose Chase Audige, who's their best defender a season ago, replaced with Ryan Langborg from Princeton, key part of that Sweet 16 team for the Tigers. bring back a couple key pieces like Ty Berry, who's a really good perimeter defender, Matt Nicholson, who's just massive at the rim, just a gigantic human being. And then Burks Barnheiser, kind of a wing, small ball four, kind of a quirky player, but was really productive down the stretch, averaged, I think, 12 points a game in their final eight. So he's important. Justin Mullins, the transfer from Denver, and Nick Martinelli, two lefties who could maybe impact things at the wing spots. Martinelli up to side of the four at times. Depth isn't great, but you know, if you buy that this defense is real, and they were very good on that end of the floor with that swarming post-doubles defense with Chris Lowry running the show, if you buy that that works again and you buy that you have a really good point guard, this should probably be a tournament team, right, Brad?
I didn't have them very close to the tournament. Maybe I'm not giving the defense enough credit with Adige gone. But it seems like more people than not think that this is a tournament team. The analytics seem to think that they're a tournament team as well. I guess I just don't see Boo Booey as like an All-American level guy. And maybe the numbers show it. You know, you've obviously watched all the Northwestern. Maybe you disagree, but
I mean, he was amazing. I would have been as skeptical as you for a long time, but man, was he good. Man, like when they turned it on, like we can go back. We'll just go from their final 15 games of last year. So that's really like the rubber meets the road stretch. Final 15 games a season ago, 19.7 points, 4.9 assists, 45% from the field, 36% from three, and almost a little well over two assists to one turnover.
I think
All-American point guard level play.
I think this might be kind of a similar situation that was upsetting me about the Providence coverage, where I'm like, Jaden Pierre and Corey Floyd were like good last year, like they'll be good again this year, but people from the outside are just like, yeah, you know, 2 points a game, whatever. Is that what you think I'm doing with like Barnheiser and Martinelli and these guys?
I think Martinelli's probably gotten a little overrated. I mean, Martinelli had some really nice moments, but he's still like a former three-star recruit who was very much like never asked to do anything other than just be active. I mean, Brooks averaged almost 9 points a game as a redshirt freshman last year. I didn't realize that because he was such a role player for most of the way. But by the end, I mean, he was an 8 point a game guy in conference play. Brooks was 8.5 points, 5 rebounds, 40% from three as a redshirt freshman. Like that's translatable breakout type stuff. Now, I do think the logical question with Northwestern is, who is the second scorer, right? Ty Berry shot the ball really poorly last year. Maybe he bounces back. Langborg moving up from the Ivy. Yeah, he's a good player. Is he a second scorer, right? But that was the problem last year for Northwestern at times, was do they have a second scorer? When is Case Audige? When he's on, great, they do, but he was off more than he was on, and very consistent. So I think that's the crux of it for me. I have him 46th nationally. So in my view, I get asked a lot by Northwestern fans, alumni, fellow friends, whatever. You know, what's the expectation? I said, you should be disappointed but not surprised if they miss the NCAA tournament. Like, I think it'll be right at the margin. But
yeah, 46 is the cut line.
I mean, I guess my view is that the only thing that would talk me out of Northwestern's tournament team is Northwestern won a lot of close games last year, and Northwestern has not won close games for like 5 years. All of a sudden won all of them. And if that regresses, all of a sudden this is, you know, 11th or 12th in the Big Ten again. So
yeah, I had them 67th and 11th, or no, yeah, 11th. I'm genuinely surprised that seems like most people have them as a tournament team. I think it's just, I didn't look at this defense and say, wow, but it seems like, I mean, and I'm a huge Nicholson guy. I love that type of player. Maybe it's me stereotyping these white guys, but
no, he is gigantic.
I was talking more about Barnheiser and Langborg and Martinelli with my stereotyping as just not being a great defense. But
fair enough.
We'll see.
I mean, their defense was pretty white last year with Martinelli and Barnheiser
the
and Rob
was like an all, you know, that's was true. Wasn't he like an elite defender?
He was. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Maryland. Maryland, 23rd in KenPom last year. I think by all accounts, a successful first season for Kevin Willard. They've gotten back into the DMV in recruiting. They are, you know, able to bring back Jameer Young, Julian Reese, Dante Scott, huge pieces, guys who are building blocks. And I don't think it was a guarantee that they'd get Young and Scott back by any means with the COVID year. Brad, I think we've talked about this in the past, this offseason. Maybe a little underwhelming in terms of like the margin moves they've made, but felt like they very much recruited to fill specific holes and probably save NIL money for Young, Deshaun Harris-Smith, Scott, Julian Reese. I mean, they added Jordan Geronimo from Indiana, who I kind of originally thought would be like a mid-plus, goes to Maryland. Chance Stevens, 6 points a game, a little Marymount. Maybe Traor, kind of an interesting swing. Like they did not go out and get a high-end transfer, but they have an NBA prospect in Harris-Smith on the wing. They have two proven front-court players, and they have one of the best point guards in the country in Jameer Young.
I thought I saw that Chance Stevens is out for the year. Is that true?
It might be. I mean,
I'm firing up Twitter right now, searching for Chance Stevens. I just see a random tweet from Carl Heiser that says he'll be out for most of the season.
Jeff Ehrman said he'll miss next season. That was in June. Okay, good to know.
But anyway, on the more pressing players here on Maryland, seems like Young is obviously one of the best guards in the country. Reese has had a monster year. Bring a ton of athleticism to the front court. Scott's been around forever. He's, you know, double figures, big physical guy with some skill. The other two spots are where I think most people have the freshman in there, Kaiser's shooter, and then Deshaun Harris-Smith, who I watched recently. He's kind of like a smaller Shabazz Muhammad. Like he's a huge, like he's high volume, super athletic, super energetic. He's just like flying around, like firing up shots, like flying toward the rim.
I gave like a bit of a Cam Thomas comparison.
Yeah, I could see that. I think Thomas is probably a much better shooter. Like yes. Harris Smith is like a he'll average double figures. He'll be a very good college basketball player. I just don't know if he's an NBA first round prospect like I think I've seen some people have. But maybe the big swing guy here is Geronimo, who flashed a lot at Indiana. And I guess we'll see if he plays some three in bigger lineups or if he's just kind of subbing in for the front court guys. But he gives them even more athleticism up front and see if he can match some of the highs from his Indiana times.
Yeah, it will be interesting shooting-wise how this shakes out. Because, you know, as you said, Harris Smith's probably not going to shoot a great percentage. I love Kaiser. Kaiser's a great glue guy. He should be in corner three. But not necessarily, not necessarily a guy you're going to count on as your best shooter. Scott can space it. Like, they don't have a shooter, other than maybe like a Noah Bachelor. So, you know, I mean, I guess Jameer Young is like a top five shooter in the country per Andy Katz. But that doesn't really do us much. They don't have a ton of shooting. This team just doesn't feel that dynamic to me. I think they're good. I think they're a tournament team. Last year they're 23rd. I think they settle in around that number this year, right at the fringe of the top 25, top 4 to 5 in the Big Ten. Good year, but it does feel like maybe they missed an opportunity to go all in. And unless Harris Smith is like a dude right away, I think they probably come up just short of doing that.
And they made a lot of, like, salary cap moves.
Yeah.
We were calling them all offseason. like, Matty Traore is, like, a complete flyer, right? Like, he was a decent recruit who fell late in the process. He was off of, what, New Mexico State? You know, that's a fine flyer. But then they took a three-star big, Braden Pierce. A couple of the three-star guys are back from last year. You know, Chance Stevens, who's hurt, but, you know, that was kind of a similar one where he played, or he committed to David Cox at URI way back when. And he's a shooter, but, you know, was a single-digit mid-major scorer, right? So, looks like, you know, you would think Maryland has a ton of money to throw around, but some of these moves at the back of their rotation, looks like they were saving up to spend on Jameer Young and whoever else they needed to keep.
And Derek Queen potentially in 2024?
Derek Queen, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's a monster. I've seen him play. He is.
Boogie Cousins.
Yeah.
In college. So, all right. Where do you have him nationally? I'm fourth.
25th. Third in the Big Ten.
I'm fourth in the Big Ten, 28th nationally. All right. Illinois, weird year. Two top five wins in the non-conference, all the buzz, all the excitement, kind of fall flat down the stretch. Never quite got there. You had the Sky Clark situation. You had the Jaden Epps situation. You had guys just kind of scared to shoot. You know, RJ Melendez's confidence really wavered. It just was a weird year. Didn't feel like everybody liked each other. That's been kind of openly confirmed at this point by Ty Rogers. And Illinois goes into this year hoping that they have a better mix, feeling like they do. Right? There's confidence, but obviously it's October. Everybody's confident. Bring back Terrence Shannon. Bring back Coleman Hawkins. The Hawkins move particularly was very surprising. I think everyone thought that was done, and he's hung around. But the hope is that the new portal guys bring about a better mix. Marcus Damask is a guy they're very high on. I was told by a source inside that program that Damask might be their second best player behind Shannon. He has been really good in practice. Just that, like, big, steady wing who could make shots, make plays, like just a ball player. And they needed one of those. Guerrier from Oregon, guy at one point I think we felt like was on a maybe All-American trajectory. It's really stagnated, but the talent's still there. You still have Dane Danger up front. And I think they hope that Luke Goody can help them space the floor and give them that. But the point guards are really the focal point of this. Ty Rogers, can he play the point? They're viewing him as like an Andre Jackson type player. 6'6", 6'7", uber athletic, great defender. Finding guys who can process and handle the ball in big moments like Andre Jackson is very, very rare. Right? I mean, he's a once-in-a-generation player. And they're hoping that Ty makes it too. If not, you've got Sincere Harris, who's offensively challenged. You've got Draven Gibbs-Lawhorn, who's more scorer than passer. You've got, you know, Shannon at the one again, which, yeah, we've seen it's not a great recipe. So him first as a scorer. I mean, I hate to boil it down to just a point guard because I think there's more to it. I think they're more balanced. I think they're a little bit, you know, a little bit better spacing the floor. Chemistry could be better, but all that is going to not move the needle enough if the point guards aren't better.
I don't see how the Rogers thing's going to work. Like, he's like a legit four-man. It's not even like some of these past ones like Kevin McCullough, Vic Law, or Andre Jackson, which have had, you know, various degrees of success. And, I mean, Andre Jackson very rarely played point guard. Like, it was Tristan Newton and Hassan Diarra.
Right, but he was their best passer and best creator. He was their best passer and creator. Yes, they had a guy who could bring the ball up the floor and like manage the game, but like their offense was being created through Andre more than anything else. Whether it was a short role player, as a connector, as a driver, Andre was your best creator.
I don't even know if I'd say that because they did a lot for the bigs, obviously, with Sonogo and Klingon, and a lot of Jordan Hawkins running off screens.
Right, they ran a lot of sets.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting. Like, Illinois is not a team that's going to run a million sets. But they also felt like last year they couldn't, like, the biggest reason that they felt like they struggled last year were inconsistent and couldn't deal with all the runs that opposing teams would make was they, like, Illinois felt like, okay, we get punched in the mouth a little bit. Most teams go down the floor, they run a set, they get a good look, they score, they settle the game down. And they could not do that. because guys didn't know the plays. You know, you had Clark and Epps as freshmen running the point. Like, they just did not feel like they could stabilize the game. And betting on Ty Rogers to do that is a real risk.
Usually when you need someone to settle the game down, you don't turn to your backup power forward last year to handle the ball, right? That's not...
Ty Rogers, they felt like they recruited him as a point guard. They felt he should have played more as a point guard last year. And they said that to me throughout the last year. This is not revision.
I mean, thinking back to watching him in FIBA, I don't get any... I guess this is more Scotty Barnes than the examples that I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Again, which I remember watching Scotty Barnes in U19. It's like, okay, he made like a pretty nice big-to-big pass there, but like I could never imagine this guy playing point guard. And it's like kind of worked, kind of the balloon is letting out some air.
They should at any given time have Shannon, Damask, Hawkins, guys who can handle the ball and pass. On the floor. It's tricky.
We're gonna need to see this in practice. We could talk about the past examples and everything until we're blue in the face, but we're gonna have to see it.
I have them ranked, I believe, 24th. we'll get to see it in action. They'll play Kansas in a public charity exhibition, October 29th. So. Give everyone a chance to hedge or not hedge if they'd like on the
Olympics. But then for the rest of the non-point guard discussion here, realize that Terrence Shannon was awesome last year. I didn't realize he had quite that level of a season. He should be in the mix for an All-American spot this year.
No, he's one of the best players to return to college basketball, for sure.
He is very shot-first. Dating back to his time at Texas Tech as well. Coleman Hawkins, he was someone who I thought had a much better year than he actually did, at least statistically. Because so much discussion was on him as like an NBA prospect and stuff. So I guess we'll have to see how much of that is kind of the NBA wish fulfillment and how much of that is he can take a step this year. And then on Matthew Meyer from last year, I mean, that was so predictable that, people viewed him as like an All-American because of him being a decent sixth man on that national championship Baylor team, but he was never that good. He's like a decent player, a fine starter, a good shooter, and he's not a, replacement for a Kofi Coburn level player, which is what supposedly they paid him as, right?
Beloved by the analytics.
Yeah, I have them 6th and 31.
All right, next we have Iowa. Iowa just keeps the train moving, right? Lose Luka Garza. All right, Keegan Murray, step on down. Lose Keegan Murray. All right, Chris Murray, step on down. 20 points a game last year for Chris. He's off to the pros, first round pick. And here comes Tony Perkins. I do think that there's a step back from a like pure like top end talent standpoint with this group, but I do think they have a chance to be a little bit deeper. I think they feel like Patrick McCaffrey can take a step. The Peyton Sanford will be a lot better than he was a season ago, and that they're deeper up front with Ben Cricky, Owen Freeman, Evan Bronze. Like, they're deeper in the front court and have an interesting piece as well in Josh Dix, who was a sneaky U19 invitee, big-time shooter. You know, this is a development program. You know Iowa's going to be good offensively. They have some experience. Do they have enough to be a tournament team? That would be really the question. But I think you feel good that Iowa's going to not going to defend, they're going to score, and that they're going to develop players under Fran.
Yeah, I have them 47th, so the first team out.
Wow.
Which that's giving their development the benefit of the doubt, right? Like there are more talented teams that I have behind Iowa. Perkins was someone I thought everyone was on board as him being like a very good Big Ten player, but it seems like most Big Ten fans see Sanford and McCaffrey as being like far superior.
He had a weird year where Perkins at points looked like a premier guard in the league, but just the consistency wasn't there. In total, he's 12-4-3 on 44-33-76. But like that is 2 points against Michigan, followed by 22 against Maryland, back to back. Right? That is 32 against Illinois, 8 against Purdue, 7 against Minnesota, 24 against Ohio State. If they get the good Tony Perkins every night, he's going to be one of the best guards in the country. If they don't, I think it's going to be harder for them. And Sanford, I mean, Sanford would wind up being a 15-a-game scorer just if he had shot the ball to the level they believed he can, could. I mean, he was 39% in conference from three, but early in the season, he could not get one to drop. And he was 10 points a game as a sophomore. That big wing shooter archetype, like they're gonna give him some latitude, you would think.
And so then I guess there's a question, right, of on the last perimeter spot, would be Bowen a more traditional point guard or Josh Dixon slide Perkins up to the one?
I have Dix and Perkins together.
Yeah, Dix supposed to be a big time shooter. Yeah. Heard some good things about Brock Harding.
He is so small, but man, is he fun to watch. Kind of a ball on string point guard.
And then you got the five spot where you have Ben Cricky right from Valpo. Evan Bronze has a couple years of eligibility. And then Rothstein keeps tweeting about Owen Freeman.
Owen Freeman he played with Brock Harding in AAU. I saw them both play. I liked Owen Freeman, but I thought he was like more like a Missouri Valley player. Like I liked him because I felt like this is a big guy. He's going to rebound and stretch it. But I don't know that he's like an impact freshman the way he's getting tweeted about. He had good numbers in an international trip. But to me, I think he's more of a reserve on this. I mean,
the fact that Fran took two transfers.
Right. That too.
Yeah. Also kind of signifies that. Cricky, too, averaged 19 points a game last year.
He's very skilled offensively. I think that will be a bit of an upgrade over Rabracha.
I was a big Rabracha guy once upon a time. Thought he was going to average more than Keegan Murray.
That's right. Yes. We all make mistakes. Well, all right. I have Iowa.
Wait. You had picked a different Iowa Hawkeye, right?
That trying to get a J-Bo, right?
Yeah, it's probably Bohan. Yeah.
Yikes. Either way, I have Iowa 11th in the Big Ten, but 58th nationally, and the margin between Rutgers, Michigan, and them very tight.
Yeah. I'm 8th and 47th, but, I mean, this defense could be a dumpster fire. But yep. They're going to have three guys, right, with Perkins, McCaffrey, and Sanford that were basically double figures. McCaffrey was, like, just under. So, yeah, those three guys. Cricky averaged, like, 20 a game. And then when Dix can really shoot it, Harding can score. So this offense should hum once again.
Yep. They'll be right there. They'll be fun to watch. It's, again, I think we kind of know what an Iowa Fran team looks like at this point. So, all right, on to Michigan. Michigan, weird year, 18-16. Looked like a tournament team down the stretch, but didn't quite finish a lot of those games, right? Had that blown lead against Iowa that really cost them. Had that, that was early in the year. They had that double overtime loss to Illinois, overtime loss to Indiana to close the regular season. In that game against Wisconsin, leading late, not being able to quite finish it. In that game against Indiana, again, not being able to finish. It just was a weird year. Lose the two lottery picks, Jet and Code Buffkin. I guess Buffkin was 15th. Lose Dickinson. But we've talked about this. The vibe of the Michigan offseason was terrible. The actual result was not that bad. Doug McDaniel back, Terrace Reed back, add Kamawa, add Damari Burnett. Add Trey Jackson, take a shot on an international kid, Lee Aliyah. Curious where you stand on this Michigan team, Brad, because especially if you're buying a little Damari Burnett stock, you could talk yourself into Michigan pretty good.
I went with 66th and 10th. So their defense could be good. Like the front court defense should be good with Nakamura and Reed. And I mean, between Reed and McDaniel, you have two former very good recruits that got their feet wet last year. Burnett, yeah, I mean, he's never been healthy. He's never shown it. But he was supposed to be this great two guard. So I guess if we can see that from him.
I was talking to somebody who coached against him in the AAU circuit and just reminiscing on how good he was. Like, he was unbelievable playing with Jalen Green on Team Why Not.
And so that's four pretty solid starters right there. I mean, you could quibble that, you know, maybe those that top four is an NCAA tournament level talent, but it still should be a good team. I get there's questions on Burnett, you know, figuring out Reed and McDaniel taking a jump. Nakamura, you know, was a role guy for most of his time in Tennessee. But the real question is fifth starter, right? Where people have thrown out Trey Jackson, who's a stretch four playing the three. Ooh. Terrence Williams has been pigeonholed at the three a lot in his Michigan career. Goes small if Llewellyn is healthy. But there's just not a lot of great options. We were joking about how many power forwards they picked up. So that fifth starter, right? Like if you use a traditional power forward at the three, that's probably going to hurt your defense as they're chasing around, you know, the Baylor Shiremans and the Stephon Castles of the world at the three.
Correct.
So that could kind of undermine the defense a little bit. And then they're not going to have the shot creation and the ball handling. Playing the four guy at the three.
I almost think they have to play McDaniel, Llewellyn, and Burnett together. And I know it's not ideal because, again, they've over-recruited the four spot. Like, think about here's all these guys who I think are probably fours first. Kamala more four than five. Yo-Yo Kayat more four than five, probably, or more four than three, right? Maybe he's more three. Terrence Williams more four than three. Trey Jackson more four than five. Cheddar straight four. Jace Howard probably more four than three. Like, this whole team is power forward.
And they know it because they were going after Jose Perez even like last week.
So, I don't know. I have them just outside the tournament because it just feels weird to say, okay, Michigan missed the tournament with Hunter Dickinson, Kobe Bufkin, and Jet Howard, but is going to make the tournament with Doug McDaniel, Terrace Reed, and Olivier Kamwa. But, you know, I don't think we should be surprised. Like Doug McDaniel could be really good. Terrace Reed has a chance to be really good.
I think I'd be more surprised if Michigan made the tournament than Northwestern.
Interesting.
Despite having Michigan one spot ahead of Northwestern.
Okay. All right. Well, let's keep it moving. Let's move on to Penn State, completely new team. Go from all offense, all skill, all experience to Mike Rhodes, physical, athletic, defensive-minded. Ace Baldwin from VCU, the headliner. He's one of the better guards in the league. But I think after that, you look at this roster and see a lot of fifth-best players. Judas Wahab, that should help, right? I mean, that's a guy who theoretically could be a starting big man in this league, but his last foray in the Big Ten was not very fun. And, you know, you just look at the guys that they have in the wings. Raquanis Mitchell from UMKC, Zach Hicks from Temple, Puff Johnson from Carolina, DeMarco Dunn from Carolina. Like, just a lot of weird players. Not a lot of, like, next-level, you know, difference-making type wings. And so, you know, maybe some of these younger guys that were, you know, either at VCU like Nick Kern or were kind of buried on other places like DeMarco Dunn or Johnson, maybe those guys really step forward. But to me, this team is going to be how much can we bully you defensively?
So I think one of the biggest disconnects for me. It seems like people think of Ace Baldwin as like a borderline All-American, where I considered him as being like a nice, good point guard. Like if he's your point guard, you're in good shape. But it seems
I agree
people think of him as like a star.
He's a great defender and a good passer, but like I agree with you.
Like as a best player on a Big Ten team, I think you're in a lot of trouble there. And then as a second best player, potentially Kudus Wahab. He was very bad at Georgetown last year as well. He was very bad at Maryland the year before. So now we're two full seasons away from him being good. I'm not exactly sure what happened, if it was injuries or what, but I'm not sure that they have a great solution at center either. And then, as you said, the rest of the team, it's fifth best players, right? It's taking flyers on guys. Zach Hicks is interesting. He's someone who a lot of people thought would break through last year at Temple. He's kind of a shooter who doesn't make enough shots at that four spot.
Yeah, big wing, good athleticism, good take. Just, you know, again, who's the difference maker?
Clary and Brown have shown some flashes last year at Penn State, but overall, I think this team is way down talent-wise, top to bottom, right? Like, Baldwin as your best player is not great. Wahab is your second best player is not great. And then, you know, I guess it's fine having, like, Nick Kern and Zach Hicks as, like, your 6 and 7 or whatever, or 7 and 8, however it ends up. But that's not moving the needle against some of these other middle-of-the-pack Big Ten teams.
Yep. No, I agree with you. I have them 85th nationally. Maybe that's even a little high. I will say they're not going to be fun to play against, right? Because they're very athletic. It isn't like they're going to grind you out. They're going to know they have to. That road trip is never fun. Like, they're going to steal a game or two, like a sleeper game. They're going to play like Tuesday night against Illinois. And they're going to beat Illinois, and like the world's going to come crashing to the ground. And it's just going to be the style of their team.
I have them 12th and 93rd.
Right. Moving on to Rutgers. Rutgers, 19 and 15, 10 and 10, really fell apart down the stretch. I got a tribute to Mawat Mag's injury. But I do think at some point you got to say there's more to it than just this. If your team is that ripped to shreds because Mawat Mag can't play, you have problems, right?
He was what, their fourth or fifth best player?
Yes. Right, and we talked about this last year. Like, we can't be asterisking Mawat Mag and Hunter Couture and all these guys. Like, you gotta have, like, yes, if you didn't have your best player, I get it. But this was your fourth best player, right? You got to be able to figure it out. Complete change of the guard here. Mulcahy gone, McConnell gone, Cam Spencer gone. They're leaning into youth with Derek Simpson. They're leaning into a grad transfer point guard and Noah Fernandes. And they're hoping to play a lot faster. You know, that's all you can hear about. Everybody's like, Rutgers is going to play fast. Rutgers is going to play fast. They're going to fly up down the floor. Da, 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 da. And I don't know how much of that is like, hey, we're recruiting Ron Harper Jr. or not Ron Harper, excuse me, Dylan Harper. And we need to like look like we're going to play a different style and help recruit him and Ace Bailey. I don't know if that's, you know, just reality of like they realize they don't have enough juice offensively to do it, to play another way. I don't know if Pike will have some great awakening. Like, it just feels very antithetical to what they've been, which is like defense first, defense second, defense third. We're going to grind, grind, grind. Now, like, we're going to run, we're going to press, like, we're going to. And I don't necessarily know that they have the team to be like, yeah, absolutely, run and press. Like, they don't have a ton of depth. They have a couple of good young scorers in Simpson and Griffiths, and they have a very good big in Cliff Omori, enough to, you know, feel good about them being in the tournament picture. But I've seen a lot of like, oh, Rutgers is more talented than they've been, whatever, and maybe that's true. But I do think we're maybe overlooking the replacement challenges of losing just like good starters like Caleb McConnell and Caleb Spencer and Mulcahy.
Yeah, I think the Mulcahy and Spencer was kind of the dagger there. I still think Rutgers can be pretty good. Like, I'd be just missing the tournament. But like looking at this roster, if you could throw in either Spencer or Mulcahy, I think we would be talking about Rutgers as like a fringe top 25 team, right? Like this defense should still be very good. They have one of the best rim protectors in all of college basketball. If Mag is back, they're gonna have a great defensive 3-4, right, with Hyatt and Mag. Griffiths is a knockdown shooter. He's a great player. We'll see how he translates year one, but he should be in for a pretty big role now that the depth chart kind of opened up. And then it's going to come down to Simpson, right? Feels like the Rutgers fans like love Simpson. I think he's this great starting player. I guess we'll see. And then Fernandez is like always hurt, but he can shoot. He's a productive point guard. You know, he can create shots. So I think that they're maybe one piece short, as we were saying earlier, like if they had Spencer or Mulcahy. But I guess question for you is probably seen a little more of these guys than I have. Do you think the Fernandez, Simpson, Griffiths 1-2-3 is going to hold up to Rutgers' standard on the defensive end?
I don't. I mean, Fernandez is very small. Simpson is frail. Like, he's not a big guy by any means. Like, I think they're going to have to be able to score it a lot better than they have. And that's where I think it's interesting, right? Again, we're talking about going to play with pace. We're going to speed up, right? Like, maybe it will fix it, but it just feels like trade-offs to me. And again, I don't know. Like, I want to buy in because Pikel's never really had a – like, since he got it going at Rutgers, they haven't dropped. Like, they've been able to maintain it with new players and whatever. But it's just I think there's just one too many question marks for me at the moment. So that's why I have him just outside the tournament, 55th nationally.
I'm 48th right outside as well.
All right. Next up, we have Wisconsin. 9-11 last year, missed the tournament. Weird, you know, I think predictable in some ways, right? I think we both looked at this roster last year and said, this is somewhat underwhelming. Like, they need more talent. If they're going to be a really good team, they need better players than this. Like, Chucky Hepburn is not Johnny Davis. Tyler Wall is not a guy you carry an offense around. You need more. And there was just something like, so whether it's been player development or recruiting or whatever it is, it just feels as though they've taken a step back in the talent acquisition department. And that's something that needs to be corrected. Now, Wisconsin seems to think they fixed it, right? They get AJ Store in. That really helps, right? And, you know, the freshmen, I know they like Blackwell. They like Yaldin. They like Nolan Winter, right? The margins are very slim for Wisconsin, right? Where they're always kind of toeing the line talent-wise. And they've had teams that neither you or I thought was very talented find a way to compete for Big Ten championships because they've been old, they've been experienced, but they've had just enough, right? Like, and they've had good chemistry. Where do you come down? Do you think they have enough this year? Does Store plus the freshman make enough of a difference? Maybe a leaner Chucky Hepburn make a difference, a healthy Tyler Wall, right? Like, they were good early in the year last year because other teams were catching up and Wall was healthy, Hepburn wasn't as beat up. Once you got into Big Ten play and they got, you know, banged up and you had the sprained ankle for Wall that took them a while to really get 100% from, you know, they felt very overmatched physically and they didn't have the depth. I think it should be better. But I've also seen a lot of like dark horse Wisconsin Final Four conversation. And to me, that feels a little aggressive for where the roster is.
No, I'm 26. So I saw Store a lot last year at St. John's. He's very good. He had like an awesome freshman year. He's a good athlete. He can score at all three levels. He hits shots. He's a great plug in there at the three. Really elevates their talent level. I think even without AJ Store, though, I think everyone would have them as a tournament team. Right? Like the NIT team that's running it back, like everyone puts that team in the tournament.
Yes. No, I agree with you there.
And they upgraded at least one spot, and then it seems, you know, that they really like, as you said, Blackwell and Yalden should upgrade their you know, make their top eight and upgrade their depth as well.
I do think it'll be really interesting to see how guard deals with store, right? Like, you've seen some of the narrative, and I don't want to put this on him because it seems like the whole St. John's thing was a mess, but you know, just flat out went and said, like, yeah, the players didn't respect Mike Anderson. They didn't go to class. They didn't do whatever. And I have a hard time believing that, like, AJ Store, who went to four high schools, is like the crown jewel good guy in the midst of all that, right? And I'm very curious how Greg Gard approaches it, right? This is not a normal Wisconsin style recruit. I think it was very obvious that they went out and said, like, we need to get a little bit more athletic. We need to take a little bit of risk on talent. Store was available. He's local from Rockford, Illinois, about a two-hour drive from Madison. Decided to take a shot. They needed it because they couldn't play Jordan Davis the amount of minutes he was playing. They couldn't play, like, all these guys. Just not – Carter Gilmore played so much last year. Carter Gilmore is a zero offensively. Good kid, defends, but, like, zero offensively. They just needed more. And I'm curious to see, will Gard be able to let A.J. Store be A.J. Store?
I mean, yeah, I mean, we don't know exactly who was, alluded to there with the St. John's stuff, but they had very good players that Rick supposedly didn't want back, so I think reading between the lines there. But.
Yep. I have Wisconsin 29, 30th.
I think I should also note, 30, too.
31st, excuse me.
In Big Ten play, their leading scorer was Asijan, who was a freshman.
He can really shoot it, and it does feel like he's been forgotten about a little bit. But he's a very good he's a very good player. I just don't know that. The question I really have is, does he have upside? Like, is there a next step for Connor Asijan?
Hey, mark me down for those 13 points per game in conference again, if you're...
No doubt, but I think... Nothing. But part of the reason he needs to score 13 points a game is because that team was not very talented.
That's fair.
Who's next? Right. Nebraska, three teams to go. Nebraska was surprisingly feisty last year. They go 16-16 overall, 9-11 in the league. Disappointing ending, losing to Minnesota, wiping them out of NIT consideration. But it did feel like Fred Hoiberg kind of figured out, like, yeah, like, we just can't – we're not going to outskill people. We're not going to recruit a good enough player in this league to be able to be like, we're playing four out and shooting the cover off it and zigging while everyone else zags. He said, all right, we're going to battle you. Sam Griesel is going to be physical. Derek Walker is going to be physical. We've got these bigger wings with Bandamel, who got hurt, and then Wilcher. And you've got – and just flamethrower of a shooter in Tominaga, who really took off for them down the stretch. Part of their big rise was him having five straight 20-point games in February, including a 30-ball against Penn State on the road – or, excuse me, at home. Like, they were a fun watch when Tominaga was going. But – losing Griesel and Walker and having to go into the portal and replace with those spots, you know, I worry it's a step back. They added Boogie Coleman from Ball State, who was a failed high major player at Mizzou. They added Rink Mast from Bradley, who's a good player, but he's more like a traditional power forward than like a big five. Derek Walker was so big for them. So I like Tominaga. I like Jamarcus Lawrence. Bryce Williams is a shooter. Juwan Gary is a activity guy. Josiah Alec, another activity guy. But when you don't have a good point guard, you don't have a good center in this league, it gets tough in a hurry. And I think this thing winds up being another struggle for Hoiberg and Nebraska.
Which probably means that's it for Hoiberg, right?
You would think. You know, I think he probably bought himself a little bit of equity last year, but like, it still wasn't the postseason. I think there's a belief that they have to continue to be move upwards or like continue or at least be like competitive again. Like, they won 9 Big Ten games last year. I'd be stunned if they won 9 Big Ten games this year. I'd be stunned if they won 7.
Yes, yeah. Point guard question marks. Bryce Williams is really interesting because when he entered the portal and, like, you saw his stats and playing on a good, you know, Charlotte's pretty high up there for mid-majors. You figured this guy was blue blood bound, right? Like that Duke and UNC and Kansas would come calling. He's now presumably the best player on Nebraska. Also saw good things about Rink Mast.
Hold on. No. Tominaga is the best player in Nebraska.
Really?
Tominaga.
I always thought of him as just kind of like a scoring, not necessarily a gimmick, but like. So you think of Tominaga more as a best player than just as like a scorer?
I mean, yes, he is just a scorer, but Casey Tominaga in the last 15 games last year averaged 17 a game on 53 from the field and 42 from three. I don't care that he doesn't rebound or do anything else. He is a dude.
I guess I didn't realize that people were super serious about him. I thought it was more that it, you know, he's shooting these bombs and he's.
I mean, I agree. It's not serious. Like, I don't think we're like totally on the wrong page here. Like the different pages here. I think it's weird for him to be a best player. He's kind of just like an awkward style college basketball player. He's, you know, goofy. He averaged in those games less than 2 rebounds, less than 1 assist, less than 1 steal, and 1/10 of a block in 15 games. Like, I get it. But if you are going to be a 65% effective field goal percentage guy running off screens, getting doubled and tripled the whole game, that's like an unreal weapon, right? Like, that's serious stuff. And their offense was 149th last year. It was not good. Without him, it was a train wreck. They couldn't do anything. I mean, he was offensive rating. His offensive rating was 119.6. They didn't have a single other guy in the rotation whose offensive rating was above 101, other than Juwan Gary, who was out half the year. Like, he was a – like, let me see if we can some on-offs, because we love our on-offs. Like, they could not do anything without him offensively. So, yeah, maybe Bryce Williams is going to defend a little more, do whatever, but, like, buckets are buckets. I don't know why I'm all of a sudden the Keisei Tominaga guy, but I'm happy to carry the flag.
Yeah, I can't really articulate it. Like, not a gimmick, but I didn't know that people considered him to be, like, a best player type. I thought he was just, like, a cool player on a bad team.
I think he was a cool player on the bad team until, like, the final month of last year when they started winning, and it was like, holy balls. They were 11 points better per 100 possessions offensively with him on the floor. They were 88.7 points per 100 possessions against top 100 teams without it. All right. Let's see. Who else? I have him outside the top 100 in Nebraska. Just outside, like 115.
I put him 99. Yeah, I'm not. You know, it's tough with a lot of these transfer-heavy teams. Like, think about Oklahoma and LSU, where it's kind of like, you know, the fans would say, well, we got all these transfers, we upgraded, why aren't we going to make a tournament? And you're just kind of like, just because you're not? I don't know. It's just like, right. we don't trust the coach as much. We don't like the transfers as much as some of the other transfer heavy teams, and then we just kind of slot you to the middle back of your league.
All right, next we have Ohio State. Such a strange year last year. Started okay, 2 wins in Maui, hung around with Duke. Just like come January 1st, the narrative with Ohio State was, you know, they haven't won the big game yet, but they look pretty good, right? They blew out Northwestern on the road that on New Year's Day. I watched that game. I was like, wow, like, this team is good, man. And then they lost 14 of 15. Most of them competitive games. 2-point Purdue, 7 Maryland, 3 Minnesota, 4 Rutgers, 3 Nebraska, 9 Illinois, all right, 16 Indiana, 5 Wisconsin, 8 Michigan, 6 Northwestern. Like, they were in a lot of games, but just couldn't win them. And quickly, you know, by midway through the year, this was like, oh, Chris Holtman's terrible. You got to fire him, whatever. And I think Holtman did a good job getting him to keep fighting. They won three conference tournament games, which was big. And more importantly, I think they got some of these young players. Obviously, Sensabaugh is a pro now. He was good from the jump. But getting Bruce Thornton up to speed, getting Roddy Gale up to speed down the stretch was big. They made a conscious effort in those final 10 games of the year or so to get him, to get Felix Akpara, and you know, even some of the other guys that are back, like Zed Key, who I know missed some time down the stretch, but like get those guys' feet under them for next year. And you combine those returners with another good freshman class, with Jameson Battle coming into the portal, I think you think this Ohio State team should get back to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I have them at number 29, which is fifth in the Big Ten. I'm buying a step up from the guards. Thornton and Gale. Thornton showed more last year than Gale. I remember running the Big Ten league only numbers on Gale, and they weren't as high as I would have thought, but.
He had some of those big games in the conference tournament that boosted some.
Yeah. I'm not a Jameson Battle guy whatsoever. He's like an abhorrent defender, and he didn't even, you know, score that well last year. But people seem to love Scotty Middleton. I know Tyson Chapman is hurt right now, but he was a top 40 recruit who shot like the cover off the ball in AAU. And then kind of the front court's interesting, where there are some Zed Key truthers. I know the sleepers guys are Team Akpara over Key. I always considered Key to be a good player, but it seems like maybe the people who watch more Big Ten are.
I think he's good. I don't know if he does anything really like at a high level.
I would frame it as if Key went into the portal after this season to use his COVID year,
everyone would recruit him. Yes,
everyone would. Yeah, in a heartbeat, I would take him as a starting center or a sixth man or something like that. But then the really interesting Ohio State lineup discussions at the, I guess we'll call it the three, where you got the young guy Middleton, you got the athletic guy Mahaffey, you got the shooter and Chapman, or you could slide Battle up to three, go big with Key and Akpara together.
I have one other option that you didn't mention that I think is in real conversation based on what
Devin Royal.
Nope. Devin Royal could play though. That would be playing Bruce Thornton and Dale Bonner together and Roddy Gale at the three.
Oh.
They seem to really like Bonner.
Dale Bonner famously Fran Fraschilla last year like murdered him on a broadcast. It's like, you want to see how bad Baylor's injuries are? They're playing Dale Bonner.
There's every so often, like, you pick up a line like that. That's just like you find you hear in a game, and like obviously the broadcast doesn't fully mean it, but just winds up being overly critical. Like Robbie Hummel had a few over the years with Chase Audis, where he'd be like, "I literally have no idea what Chase Audis is doing right now," and it was so funny every time.
And then there's Carl Ravitch has that tone, like, with whatever game he's on. Like, whenever there's a turnover, he's basically saying, like, God help me, why do I have to watch this college basketball game? So I think Ohio State's going to have a big bounce back.
I don't mean to derail us too much, because we're only 90 minutes in, we got to get one more team in here. But it seems like it's very consensus Indiana is worse than Ohio State. And I guess I wonder, looking at these teams, why that consensus is there.
I think because Ohio State's roster makeup makes a little more sense.
That's true. But I think Indiana's more talented, and I think the coaching bump that Holtman would get probably should be eliminated at this point, right? Like, I don't think we can confidently sit here and say now that, like, Chris Holtman is, like, miles better a coach than Mike Woodson.
No, this is really it for Holtman, right? The Buckeye fans seem to be on thin ice with Holtman.
It seems like the Buckeye fans will be upset, like, if they don't make the Sweet 16 this year.
The Butler stuff was a long time ago at this point.
So. Yes. He's got to win some March games.
Which means he's got to get out of those 7 to 10 seed range.
Yes.
But that's exactly where I have him this year. So, and then he's got to keep these guys from the NBA. Like, imagine this team was Sensabaugh. I think everyone would have them top 25.
Yeah, they've been very unlucky with the early pro departure. With Malachi Branham, Sensabaugh, even Dwayne Washington going pro a year early was a big deal. Middleton could be in that mix this year. So there's a lot of room in this draft. It'll be interesting to see if we get a few extra surprise one and dones this year because this draft is known as a weaker one. Like, is there that freshman that has a good year and someone just says, fine, we'll take you in the top 20.
Garway?
Well, I mean, Garway's the train's already left the station. Like, now it's a surprise if he's not a one and done.
I know.
Anyway, well, let's do Minnesota, our last team. Minnesota, you know, the vibes were good year one. They won the bye games. They took care of business. Yeah, they were overmatched by the time conference games came around. But, you know, everybody's happy with Ben Johnson. Seems like the players like him. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, contract extension after year one just to give him the year back. That felt risky at the time, and it looked bad now because they go 9-22 last year. You know, again, generally didn't lose the bye games, but lost it by 16 at home to DePaul, a DePaul team that didn't have Ongenda in that game. Didn't have, I think, one other guy, too. Like, they were banged up. Lost that game big. This team was, you know, struggled with Chicago State, struggled with Western Michigan. Like, this team was not good. They were untalented. Now, part of that was they were working a lot of these young players into the mix. Farrell Payne, Joshua Olajoseph, we're both high on them. Jaden Henley, who has since transferred out, but we were fans of Jaden Henley's. But they lacked dynamism, you know, and some of the recruiting decisions. I mean, it feels like Ben Johnson loves to, like, get to second base and be like, all right, we did our thing. We don't need to score the run. You love taking, like, these Taurus Samuels and, like, all these random transfers who are nowhere near good enough. I think the roster's in the best place it's been. Part of that's health, right? They got Isaiah Enan and Parker Fox supposedly have not torn their ACLs yet, which they did each of the past two preseasons. Those guys make a big difference. Parker Fox was a Division II All-American. Like, he was the big deal get for Ben Johnson. When he first got that job, it was like, oh my goodness, like, man, the level of like this is the all conference guy, maybe a potential NBA player. That's probably not likely anymore after the double ACL, but can he be a good starter? Can Isaiah Enan be a guy who contributes? He was a guy who was 5 points a game, I think, early in his career playing for Patino. Super great athlete, long, interesting prospect. So they have some interesting things they can do up front with Garcia, Payne, Enan, and Fox. But the guard play is pretty lacking, right? I mean, Olajoseph is more of a wing, but Mike Mitchell from Pepperdine is probably a lower level transfer than a lot of these teams in the league got. Same with Elijah Hawkins from Howard. Cam Christie is a top 100 recruit, but again, is he the type of guy you're like, oh my gosh, look who we got? Probably not. Not to, like, be a starter in the league this year. I just don't know if they have the guards to climb out of the cellar here.
Well, you know, the whole thing with these three stars is, yeah, maybe you hit a double, as you said, but if everyone else is hitting home runs and triples, you're going to come in last. And that's the whole thing with this, oh, we're recruiting guys from Minnesota, right? That is such a trap. It is unbelievable. Who cares where you get the players from? And you weren't even getting the best players from Minnesota anyway. And Dawson Garcia has been so disappointing. I remember watching him in high school and thought he was going to be such a monster. He had a good first year at Marquette. you know, he really should have popped in Minnesota last year, and he was pretty underwhelming. But
he was banged up, but he also like was better statistically than I remember. Like I saw some like, oh, Dustin Garcia is the best four man in the league talk, and I was like, no way. And then I looked up and said Dustin Garcia averaged 15.7 rebounds on 46% for the field. Like he needs to be more efficient, but like he had a great statistical season.
I like Payne a lot. I think Payne will take a jump. So we'll see the front court, right, with Garcia, Enan, Payne, and Fox. That should be a good front court.
Very good.
It's going to come down to the 1-3 with Ola Joseph, who might be more of a 4 than a 3, but I think he'll play 3, right? Braden Carrington, got to shoot it better. Then Mitchell and Hawkins at the 1. Can they get the job done? I think that this team is last place. Not enough talent. Like we like Payne and Ola Joseph, but as potentially the second and third best players in the team, or third and fourth.
I have them like 125. I don't think there's huge separation between Minnesota, Penn State, and Nebraska. Like I wouldn't be that surprised if Minnesota could work its way to 12th. The problem is I think Minnesota needs to do a little bit more than that. Now maybe if they can get to 12th and like steal a couple games, maybe there's like okay, we'll give you some time. You're the native son. You know, we want you to succeed. Like people seem very invested in Ben Johnson being good for Minnesota, and he still has a lot of time left on his contract. But
what's a lot of time?
I think he has a 6-year deal. So he's got 4 left on it.
So he's definitely getting year 4.
I don't know if it's definite. I think if they come in last again, they'll fire him.
What a disaster. Who could have seen that coming?
We both were correct on that hire. I tried to be civil and nice about it because I think he's a great guy. And everybody thinks he's a great guy. Everybody wants him to succeed.
I'm trying to find it. When they hired Ben Johnson, I saved some tweets from one of their fan accounts on Twitter.
Well, the other problem with the whole like recruit locally thing is it was predicated on the idea that there was all this incredible local talent in Minnesota. Right? Richard Pitino starting with turning down McKinley Wright for Isaiah Washington. Decided that recruiting in Minnesota wasn't that important, and there's all this talent in Minnesota, and we're not getting any of it, and everybody else is winning with our players, and that's a pretty bad recipe usually to keep your job, is when other people start winning with your players, right? And that's Chet, that's Jalen Suggs, that's Matt Hurt, right? Were they getting those guys? Probably not. Ever, no matter who's coaching them. Ben Johnson, Coach K, like Minnesota was not getting those dudes. But, you know, these last couple classes, like in 2022, so that'd be the first full Ben Johnson high school class. I can't see. Like it started being Josh Ola Joseph and those guys. Not, you know, I know that you're right. They missed on some guys, but they also stopped being the 5-stars. I'm trying to look and see if I have a good example here.
I mean, I started looking into them when it was Minnesota versus Providence for Jaden Pierre. I was going through their message board, and I was like stunned at how positive they were about Ben Johnson. Like absolutely like floored. Yeah. So like, oh, the experts gave it a C and the coaching grades, you know, they're a bunch of fools. Look, oh, he landed another Minnesota kid. And I'm like looking around like, this is what you guys are excited about? Like the other Big Ten teams are throwing around all this money, bringing in 4 and 5 stars, and you guys like these 3 stars just because they're from your state. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
They beat Loyola for those guys.
And I like them. I think that they're going to be good. But, like, I like Jaden Henley, and he's off to DePaul, right? Like, what's going to stop Pharrell Payne from putting up 12-7 this year and then getting a huge bag in the portal to go to Duke or Kentucky or wherever?
I mean, probably nothing, right? Like,
you can't rebuild like that. Every year you got to be as best as you can. You can't just play young guys and be like, oh, we're getting them better for next year.
Ben's got to win some this year. Let's just put it that way. So, all right, hot seat in this league, Ben Johnson, potentially Fred Hoiberg, warming Juwan Howard and Chris Holtmann. Don't really see it happening, but it's at least probably going to be a conversation if both of them miss the tournament. I would say the same thing with Greg Gard. I think if Wisconsin misses the NCAA tournament this year, Greg Gard might get fired.
So that's only two. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it's consecutive years with no NCAA tournament. But the year before, they were what, like a 3 seed with Johnny Davis?
Yeah.
I know that Wisconsin fans aren't exactly thrilled with Gard, but like looking at his resume, like he's won more than you would think, given the vibe.
But I'm trying to there is some football context here for our Big Ten fans. They probably are familiar with this at this point. But so Wisconsin football and basketball are very similar. In that Wisconsin football was like, oh, we're development. We recruit a lot of like these, we recruit these white kids who, you know, play hard. We run the football. We're, you know, hard nosed, whatever. Very old fashioned. And they had this very Wisconsin-y coach named Paul Christ, who was like the descendant in the coaching tree from Barry Alvarez, who was like the legendary coach. Same thing, Bo Ryan, Greg Gard, same deal. And football kind of stagnated, and their AD made this daring move. Like, we're going to fire Paul Christ midseason. We're going to get him out. We're going to hire this up-and-coming guy, Luke Fickell, who was at Cincinnati and did a great job. And we're going to – and he's going to lead us into the 21st century. We're going to play spread offense, like, completely, like, 180, like, culturally, what they're going to do. So I think there is some like institutional will to do something like that, to say, all right, like we don't have to just be Wisconsin, right? I think there's an expectation that the standards are a little higher.
Hmm.
So that would be one my take there. Jump any coaches who could leave the league this year? I guess Izzo retirement watch. Otherwise. Chris Collins wins at Northwestern and gets another job.
Louisville? I still have no idea where Louisville would go. I don't think Chris Collins would be the move there. But
if Chris Collins got Louisville this time around, it would be one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
But. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Could a Holtmann parachute if it goes well this year?
I mean, to what job? That's the problem. There's not a lot of jobs that are better. Louisville, yeah. Well, no, but he grew up a Kentucky fan, so he can never do Louisville. It's like, apparently, like, his mom would kill him or something. It's like a weird deal.
Yeah, I mean, if they're you know, being only two, one of the two solidified conferences, you would need a really specific opportunity to leave, you know, being a sitting head coach in the Big Ten and going to a non SEC or Big Ten school.
Correct. Try to think of any other retirement names. I don't think France.
In terms of teams making the tournament, I have seven, with Iowa and Rutgers right outside.
So I have 8 with Michigan, Iowa, and Rutgers all right outside, like within 10 spots.
And I have three in the top 25 with Maryland just sneaking in there at the back.
Yep, three for me, but with Illinois instead of Maryland.
I was surprised that Illinois was in the AP poll, given their lack of point guard. But
big brand.
Anything else here?
I think we can wrap it up.
Big East next week. That's exciting.
Gotta love it. All right. We will see you all next week. Keep it coming, folks. 2 weeks by the time we speak to you next. Go Colleges.